It's that time on the radio where we listen attentively to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. How are we doing today, Bill?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, thanks, Howard. Obviously feeling very Christmassy right now.
Yes.
And I'm grateful that you feel our listeners listen attentively. That's a very a big compliment. Thank you.
Well, let's see if we can make it interesting this week. We're looking about the UK statutory residency test. Now, this is reasonably new. Yeah. We talked about tax planning a week ago, I think, and how important it is to protect your wealth. But am I right in thinking that before you do that, the first step you have to establish is where you're resident for tax purposes?
Yeah, it's very clever to have brought this subject up, Howard, immediately after the strategic tax planning discussion we had last week, because I didn't mention it, but of course, before you set out to establish a strategy which will suit you and your assets and your lifestyle and your objectives with a proper tax planning arrangement, we need to know beyond any doubt whatsoever where you are actually resident. And of course, as you say, there have been some relatively recent changes, and it's our job initially to establish your tax residency and understand how the UK rules, if they apply to you, how they will affect you. You might also, as I say, be settled in your new home, but if you spend time in the UK each year and retain property there, you could still be seen as a UK resident. And there's a lot of barrack room lawyers who will tell you about what you can or can't do, about becoming or not being a UK resident. And a lot of that is, I'm sorry to say this, but a lot of that is hogwash after this new law was introduced. The statutory residence test isn't just for those who have recently departed the UK. Even if you've lived overseas for many years and believe that you're resident there, it is possible to come into the tax scope of UK taxation. So to avoid any unexpected tax bills or even a potential tax investigation, it's important that you now pay close attention to the way in which the statutory residence test works, because by understanding it and going through it in detail, you can establish beyond doubt where you are actually resident.
Let's take a look then, Bill, at this UK residency test, which can continue to affect expatriates. Mm-hmm. So first of all, what makes you a tax resident in the UK?
It's sort of an automatic residence test. You're deemed to be resident in the UK if you meet any one of the following conditions. If you spend at least 183 days in the UK in the current year, and that's the one everyone is familiar with. If you have your only or your main home in the UK, this is classed as property available to you for 91 days or more, and you actually live in that property for 30 days, then you're a UK resident. If you work full-time in the UK for at least 365 days without a break of 31 days or more, you are a UK resident. There are some conditions to that. But that automatic residence has pretty much been well understood for many years. That is what would make you a resident of the UK. What most people are interested in, of course, is what makes you absolutely certain that you're not a resident of the UK.
And what makes you a non-UK resident for tax purposes?
Yeah, I think that was a good lead in there, Howard. That the automatic overseas test is that you're treated as a non-resident if you meet any of the three conditions I'll try to explain. First of all, if you were not a UK resident in any of the previous 3 years and you spend less than 46 days in the UK in the current year, you're not a resident of the UK. If you were a UK resident in one or more of the previous 3 years but spent fewer than 16 days there in the current year, you're not a UK resident. And if you work overseas full-time, that full-time is described as a 35-hour week, if you're fortunate enough to have such a luxury, with no more than 30 days spent working in the UK, a work day counts as 3 or more hours under the revenues terms, and no more than 90 days in the UK in the relevant year, then you're not resident in the UK. Now, when we discuss these things, Howard, I almost hesitate to read out terms and conditions as they are like this, because listeners are sitting there, you know, with their cup of tea and wondering what was all that about. Well, look, let me just make it clear that Blevins Franks have produced a publication called Statutory Residence Test. It's part of the information we would normally provide to a client when we're getting some tax planning sorted. It's known as Appendix 532, the Statutory Residence Test. It's up to date. It gives a full written explanation in segments about the whys and the wherefores of the details I've just given you. But it also has a very interesting and easy to follow flow chart that enables you to actually ascertain where you're resident, whether you are a UK resident or not, very easily. And if you go to the Blevins Ranks website and the address I'll give to you later, any of the officers would be very happy to talk to you about providing you with a copy of that document so you can sit down in the luxury of your own time with another cup of tea and study it at your leisure so that you get a better understanding perhaps of the rather difficult details I'm throwing at you in the few minutes we've got to share together.
Yeah, those flowcharts are really good, aren't they? They work well.
They are.
Yeah. So, Bill, what happens if your residence is not determined by these two tests?
There's a third element to this. I gave you the three conditions to determine whether you are a UK resident or whether you are not a UK resident. There's another test called the Sufficient Ties, T-I-E-S, the Sufficient Ties test. This is where your residence position isn't as clear-cut as it might be from looking at the first two tests. The next step is then to look at whether you have got the following connections to the UK. The first is that your family, your spouse and your minor children, if they're living in the UK, that comes to be part of what's called the Sufficient Ties test. The second is that if you have what's called accessible accommodation, which is available to you, and available means that you either have a property that is yours and it's free for you to walk into, or someone has reserved accommodation for you. It might be that you've got an apartment, a granny annex or something with your children's property, but an accessible accommodation which is available to you for 91, you don't have to be in it for this period of time, but available to you for 91 or more continuous days, even if you actually spend only one night there. It's the availability for 91 days that counts. The third is that if you work in the UK and you spend 40 or more days working in the UK, is another factor in the Sufficient Ties test. If you make substantial visits, if you spend 90 days or more in the UK in either of the two previous years, If it is your favourite country, spending more days in the UK than any other single country, this only applies to people who are recently leaving the UK. Now, this Sufficient Ties test works on what I might describe perhaps as a sliding scale. I've given you five ties in the Sufficient Ties test. The more ties of those five that you have with the UK, the less time you can spend onshore without becoming a UK resident. The fewer ties you have, the longer period you can spend in the UK before UK residency will apply. The number of days and the ties vary depending on whether you are what's called an arriver, that is, you're not a UK resident in any of the previous three tax years, or whether you're what's called a leaver, and that is where you have been resident in the UK in any one of the previous 3 years. Now, the rule allows for up to 60 days spent in the UK under what they call extraordinary circumstances. That can be disregarded, but that only applies, and you shouldn't rely on it, where you have no choice and the circumstances are unforeseen and beyond your control. I mean, that doesn't, generally speaking, include visiting an ill or a dying relative. Those are considered part of the normal run of life. Extraordinary circumstances would have to be, as it says, it does what it says on the tin, extraordinary. And it's always better, if you're going to exceed your allowance, to make sure the revenue know that you're going to exceed it, and you put before them the rationale for staying on longer, because often they're considerate, often they're not. So always best to know in advance. But yeah, the most important thing is, these are difficult issues to understand in this brief discussion, Howard. And as I say, I would urge anybody to go to the Blevins Ranks website, pick up the local office address to them and ask for the appendix that we have produced on the statutory residence test. It will get you the information in solid form and you can digest it at your leisure.
Well, of course, Bill, Spain has its own rules on tax residence. So what happens if you meet the residency criteria of both Spain and the UK?
Oh, dear. You would be surprised, Howard, how many people actually do fall in that horrible crack between the residency of Spain and the UK. At the lowest level, let's assume that you own UK property and you rent your property and you get an income from it. Of course, that isn't residency of the UK, but it does create a tax liability in the UK on the income that's produced. if you make capital profits in the UK. They may very well be liable to tax in the UK. Unfortunately, you also then are misled in many respects, I think, because lots of individuals believe that having met that tax liability in the UK, they don't really have to pay tax on it in Spain. And that's fundamentally the purpose of the double tax treaty. You don't have to pay tax on it in Spain, but what you do have to do is add the income to your other income that you're declaring in Spain to determine your Spanish rate of tax. And then that rate is applied to all of your income. It may mean that what you paid in the UK wasn't sufficient. You may have to pay a supplement. However, if you paid more in the UK than you would have paid in Spain, you don't get any tax back. What a surprise. So you can fall foul of becoming a resident in both jurisdictions. It's possible to be a tax resident in both jurisdictions. And I wouldn't call it frequent. But it's not infrequent for us to meet individuals who have been living in Spain for many years and who, for one reason or another, because of the activities and associations they have with the UK and because they've actually set up their affairs in Spain properly, have fallen foul of the statutory residence test to the extent to which they do have a liability in both jurisdictions. And that is not the best position, obviously not the best position to be in. And the skills and expertise of the tax specialist at Bevins Franks is to make sure that we give you solid advice on what you need to do to make sure you only fall liable for tax in one jurisdiction or the other because you only happen to be a resident in one jurisdiction or the other.
Do you think there are many UK nationals in Spain who get their tax residency wrong? And with the global exchange of information, what would happen when the Spanish tax authorities find out about someone living in Spain and hasn't been paying their taxes here?
Yeah, it does happen. It happens mostly... In error, because of often ill-informed advice given to individuals at dinner parties and elsewhere. The simple truth is that it requires an individual, if they wish to avoid the complications of falling through that crack in the floorboards, to sit down with someone who has the skills and knowledge and the expertise and who is regulated in the conduct of investment business by the Financial Conduct Authority, to actually make an assessment with the client that they can rest their laurels upon. So when they do take action, they know that they're not building their tax house on sand and they are on solid ground. And the simple fact is lots of individuals do believe that having met a tax liability, even though they're residents of Spain, they met a tax liability in the UK for whatever purpose, that is them absolved of any responsibility for paying tax in Spain. Well, it isn't. And if... Ever, you haven't declared it and you become subject to a random audit, which is quite normal at the tax offices in Spain, and they pick up something that gives them an indication that you haven't declared all of your income because you should have been declaring on Modelo 720, in the Modelo Act, the annual declaration of overseas assets. You should be declaring the overseas assets that you've got. And if they give rise to a suspicion that there may be income arising from those assets, you will get audited at some point in time. And if you have had income that you haven't declared in Spain, despite the fact you've paid the tax in the UK, you are likely to be the subject of a tax investigation, which can lead to additional tax and more importantly, to substantial penalties. So it's quite important to get that one right. And if you aren't certain, then you should talk to people who are certain. At Bevins Franks, of course, who've been doing this for a very long time in Spain.
Yeah. And the website is excellent as a first port of call.
Yeah, I think it gives. I hope the website gives people confidence about the kind of range of skills and services that Bevins Franks offer. Of course, I think I said before, if ever you look at the website, you can't see what you're looking for. But you should contact us, and we might be able to provide additional information on the website. But there are articles on there. These radio discussions are on there, and there's a lot of useful information. But most importantly, it does give you guidance as to where you might find a local office that will give you impartial and objective advice about how you can be certain of where you're a resident, so that even if it doesn't require you to take any action, confirming with certainty your residency means you are 100% sure that you haven't made a mistake, because making a mistake can be very expensive and very difficult to deal with. So I would suggest the website's a great place at www.blevinsfranks.com.
Well, Bill, Christmas is on the horizon, and can I wish your family and all the people who work with you and know you a very Merry Christmas and a healthy New Year.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. You too. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas and, of course, a very happy New Year. I also hope, and I'm grateful to our listeners who tune in every week to listen to this programme, to thank them for their loyalty and to wish every one of them a very happy Christmas, a Merry Christmas, and of course the best of health and good luck in the coming year.
Yeah, we'll see what happens around the corner. We'll look forward to talking again just before New Year next week. UK inheritance tax, I think, we'll be talking about then. Bill, it's a pleasure as always.
Thanks a lot, Howard. No, don't have too much of that Christmas pudding.
I won't.